This is Tim O'Brien with O'Reilly Media. I had the chance to sit down with Luis Barroso, a Google Distinguished Engineer with a PhD in Computer Engineering from the University of Southern California. The context of the interview is an article that was published in IEEE Computer in December 2007 with co-author Urs Hosla, also from Google. In the article entitled The Case for Energy Proportional Computing, both Barroso and Hosla make the case that dramatic changes are needed to the way that computers are architected and the way that hardware is designed. Based on a statistical analysis of servers at Google, Barroso and Hosla identify that most servers are operating at an average of between 15 and 45% CPU utilization. They identify this region as the region in which a computer operates the least efficiently, while most efficiency benchmarks assume that a computer is operating at its maximum potential performance. I began the interview by asking Barroso to explain the concept of energy proportional computing.
This is something we feel strongly about because it seems in principle something that's relatively obvious, but it's something that I think that the computer industry as a whole has sort of maybe missed that issue in particular, right? Which is, when you talk about energy efficiency, you're never talking about just one point in the activity spectrum. You're talking about the entire spectrum.
Right.
It turns out that, you know, most people will present information about the energy efficiency of their computing infrastructure using the benchmarks that are available today, which try to run the machine as fast as they possibly can. And it turns out that, you know, when you use benchmarks for that, people will design to do well in those benchmarks. And as a result, if you look, for example, at the spec power numbers that have been recently published, the energy efficiency of just about every computer out there peaks when you're running it full blast. But and every time you're not running that computer at sort of 100% utilization, you're much less energy efficient than what the benchmark results would have hinted at. And in particular, if you look at server class machines, the argument that we make is that, you know, especially for large server installations, servers are not like mobile computers or like PDAs that are, you know, on standby most of the time. And then when they're working, they're actually trying to work as fast as possible to be responsive to the user. Servers are more, you know, running at the somewhere between the 10th percentile and 50th percentile on average over time. And in that particular region of the activity spectrum, our computers today, by and large, are very inefficient. And, you know, some of the reasons for that, I think, are because, you know, it is a bit harder, really, indeed, to be energy efficient in that range for the type of components we use, in particular for things like DRAM and for disk drives. But I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that people just haven't really focused on it. And a motivation for Urs and I to write that article was to perhaps provide a little bit more motivation for the computing industry as a whole to understand that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It looks like you've identified a region between 15% and 45% as being the range in which most of the servers in your study were operating within.
On average, yeah. So see, this is an average over 6 months, right? Of course, during that time, there'll be large groups of servers that'll be running much faster than that, for example. But if you look at, you know, energy is different fundamentally from power, obviously, in the sense that energy is sort of an average of, you know, over time, as opposed to power, which is sort of an instantaneous metric. So if you focus on energy alone, it's actually not unreasonable for servers to be sort of in that range. Most well-developed, you know, well-put-together internet services are likely to be on that range. There's nothing particularly embarrassing or wrong with that. That's as an average utilization range, it's not unreasonable. Now, the specific range that I mentioned is not important, right? It's certainly not 100%. It's certainly not 80% or 60%. It's a number that, on average, is much smaller than that.
Would it be accurate to say that we purchase our servers for the highest possible speed that they can run, but the real number that we need to be interested in if we're looking to conserve energy is the efficiency in this sweet spot?
That's exactly it.
Is it true that you've been involved with the EPA setting standards for data center energy efficiency?
I think quite a few of us at Google have collaborated with the EPA. Bill Weil, who is our energy efficiency czar, has been more directly involved in that. I believe I went to maybe one of the EPA workshops, and of course I provided, myself and a bunch of people at Google have provided feedback to the EPA on that effort, which is, I think, a really, really nice effort and very timely.
When you buy a water heater or when you buy an air conditioner, you get a number from the EPA. Like this is, you know, this is, has scored 200 on a scale of 300 in terms of efficiency. Is there any way to solve that with something similar for computers? Would we be rating the CPU or the entire computer?
That's a great question. It's much more difficult for computers. So I think it's sort of understandable to some extent that the computer industry is maybe behind the HVAC industry in that regard, and in part because the HVAC industry is a much older industry. But it's much easier to measure performance of an air conditioning system. It's much more objective metric than a computer system. Computer system is such a general purpose beast that it's hard to pin down what it is that, you know, it is producing for you. Now, having said that, it is possible, for example, there's a combination of factors you have to consider. One of them is how efficient the entire data center is in using its energy budget. And that's a metric that the industry uses called power usage efficiency, or PUE, that essentially tries to give you an idea how much energy is wasted, if you will, or used on things that are not computers. And so that's one metric you need to optimize. The other metric, it's a metric we're trying to craft as part of our Climate Savers Computing Initiative, which is something that Google and Intel spearheaded, and it's an initiative with the World Wildlife Fund and has, you know, I don't know, maybe hundreds of members these days, in trying to increase the efficiency of power conversion on personal computers and servers. And that is, you know, the power supplies and the voltage regulator modules that are, you know, on our PCs and laptops, trying to make sure that out of the power we're sucking out of the socket in the wall, that the vast majority of it is actually going to the chips in the machine as opposed to dissipated by heat in the power supply or the voltage regulators. And we establish minimum efficiency requirements for that. And we're working with EPA, actually, as well. The Climate Savers Computing Initiative, I mean, is working with the EPA in together setting standards for high efficiency in that regard. The last piece of the puzzle is, you know, once you put energy on chips, how do you define the amount of work they're doing for you? And that's the part that is tricky. Now, the spec power benchmarks are a really good first step. And I think right now, last time I checked, they only have one benchmark, which is one workload as part of the spec power benchmark. Sort of a Java enterprise workload, but there's already quite a few systems benchmarked under that. And you know, one of the things that they do very well in that benchmark is the fact that they don't measure the efficiency only when the workload is running at peak. They actually give you 11 data points from idle, 10% utilization, 20, 30, all the way to 100. So it's in that sense, it's very nice for the energy proportionality argument, because it will give a potential customer or person that's purchasing that equipment a much better idea of, you know, where do they think they are on average in terms of utilization of that machine and what kind of energy efficiency they are likely to indeed achieve at that point. So that was a long answer, I guess, because as I mentioned, this is a really tricky issue. But there are mainly three components to summarize, right? We need to make sure data centers are very efficient in removing heat, sort of cooling infrastructure, and not losing energy in the power distribution, like transformers, et cetera. We need to make sure that then once the energy gets all the way to the server itself, that the power supply and the voltage regulators on the power supply are not throwing all that energy away again before it gets chipped. And then finally, we want to make sure that once you put energy on memory chips and computer chips and disk drives, that the workloads are being as efficient as possible. And that's something that things like spec power benchmarks can help us assess.
So So is this something that needs to be solved at the hardware level in terms of moving towards CPUs that are more energy efficient, or as you coined the phrase, energy proportional, or is this something that software can play a part in?
That's a really great question. That's sort of the core of one of the things I want to mention on Monday. The real answer is both. Ideally, and what we are trying to push for is that the electronics industry itself, the people that manufacture components, CPUs, DRAM, disk drives, flash, all the components that go into the computer, they need to do better at making their components naturally energy proportional. I mean, it should be the case that if you're only utilizing your memory to, a certain small fraction of its capacity, that your memory system will only consume a small fraction of its maximum energy capacity. If you don't have that kind of natural energy proportionality, then you have to solve this thing somehow in software. And in some cases, it is easy, but in a lot of cases, it's actually very, very hard because, software, especially for large-scale internet services, is very, very complex. A lot of things that you want to do to make internet services very efficient and very reliable kind of go against the grain or against power management, essentially. And hopefully I'll be able to make it a little bit more clear in the talk that I'm making today. But essentially, there are two aspects of it. The article that you're looking at tries to talk about it, unfortunately, in only one or two paragraphs. But two things that are tried and true methods to designing, good quality distributed systems and internet services are essentially distributed system software, are doing a really good job at load balancing and doing a really good job at wide spread data distribution. Right? These things help you in performance and help you making sure that you're very likely to have your data available to you if you don't have data loss. And when you do that, you create situations where it's very unlikely when you are in a period of lower capacity that you have any one individual machine being idle for long periods of time. What you have is instead of lots of machines working very hard, you still have lots of machines working a little bit less hard. But you don't have, lots of useful periods of full idleness. At that point, the software that has to create these periods of idleness to allow your machines to be more energy proportional, if the underlying hardware is not, is really challenging, right? It's really difficult and essentially will end up sacrificing potentially performance or availability, which is not good either, right? So it's a tough problem. My main argument is that this cannot be fully solved in software. Component manufacturers need to do better at that, for us to have systems that as a whole, as a combination of hardware and software, will be more energy proportional.
Is this going to force hardware manufacturers, people who make CPUs like Intel, is this going to force them to stop focusing on clock speed and start focusing on other concerns like efficiency? Like is what you're talking about, the energy efficient, the energy proportional computing, sort of the end of Moore's law?
No, it isn't. I mean, it will force them to focus not on performance alone, but they are already there. We don't need to push them in that direction. There was another power-related issue with CPUs a few years back that's already forced them to do the big switch to multi-core, for example. That wasn't necessarily an energy issue, and that's sort of a little bit of a subtle difference, but the main reason why you see lots of multi-cores instead of seeing lots of more megahertz these days is because of temperature. And temperature essentially, is a function of power and area. So these, folks just were unable with next generation CMOS technology to operate chips at very high frequencies and still not have it melt on you, essentially. So that issue alone already has caused the CPU industry to take a broader view of value that's not just megahertz, but it's performance for cost and performance in general. Now, I must say that the CPU industry is not perfect in terms of any proportionality, but they are ahead of the other components in your system, right? If you look at CPU energy usage across low activity to high activity, it varies by a much wider margin than what you typically see for DRAM, for example, and for disk drives in particular, and even networking. So one of the arguments that we try to make in that article is that This is not just something that the CPU manufacturer is actually going to have to solve. And in fact, they actually are doing a better job attacking that problem right now than the rest of the ecosystem. But this has to be attacked everywhere.
Is there anyone in the industry doing anything exotic with CPU design that could affect power consumption? Is there anybody looking at moving away from CMOS to something different that would consume less power?
You know, lots of people are looking for it, and that's the part that's a little bit sad, in that there's no good candidate in the horizon. It looks like we're still going to be able to scale CMOS for a little while longer. You know, you should ask other experts in that industry, not my opinion as to how far, but, you know, people talk about, you know, the next 10 years, CMOS is still going to be around. There's not going to be anything that's going to replace CMOS, you know, within the next 10 years. So, it looks like, realistically, as an industry, we're stuck with CMOS technology. There's nothing that's much better